Hello, everyone, and welcome to Teach Me Teacher, a podcast for educators where we, the teachers, become students ourselves. I'm your host, Jacob Chastain, and today it is my pleasure to welcome you back to part two with Esther Brunot. We are still talking about relationships in the classrooms, but specifically what steps you can take to make those relationships work for you and the student.
I feel like my students deal with more adult things than I do.
Every school has its own issues, but we have so many students and some of them have so many backstories that are just like, wow, I can't believe you're actually here and functioning right now. But like, how do you approach that? Like, is it like, do you try to get a culture to where they can come talk to you? Do you conference with them? How do you work those pieces into that relationship piece?
I kind of just let it happen. In every area of my life, there's this thing about me, for whatever reason, people feel that I'm approachable. So I can get somebody to tell me their deepest, darkest secrets in about 5 minutes. I don't know why. It's just a thing that happens. So there's no strategy. Just one, you know, out of the blue, a kid who's been in my class for maybe a month or two, something will happen. They'll find me at the door and they'll just want to tell me things. And I'm like, all right, here I am. I'm listening to you. I try to gauge whether or not they're looking for advice, because sometimes you just need somebody to hear you out.
Yeah.
You're not necessarily looking for a solution sometimes. So a lot of times that's good enough, you know, and then they'll automatically feel invested because I listened, and they'll, you know, follow me up on what happened or, you know, what the progression is or want an opinion. What do I think about this? So for me, I just let that happen. I try to be open to it. And my personality is very task oriented. So I have to remember to let the kid tell the story and stop trying to focus sometimes on, oh, I need to get this thing done. So that is the struggle for me. So I have to remind myself, okay, if it's the beginning of class, the bell hasn't rung yet, Esther, let the kid tell you the story, you know? Or this 2-second story is not going to be the unraveling of this entire lesson plan that you just made, you know?
Yeah.
So sometimes it's realizing like the consequence of this is not huge. So you can afford to listen. You can afford to be there.
Yeah. I think I'm a fairly like, I don't know, a retroactive guilty person. You know, I don't feel guilty when I make a decision in the moment, you know,
I'm just going to
boom, I'll make whatever decision I need to make. And then afterwards I'm like, God, you know, and then I feel guilty about it. And I do that the most when, like, a kid I know having a bad day, you know, right? They're doing something, and I get on their case because they're not doing it. But, because I'm not thinking at the time, but afterwards I'm like, you know what? How much more effective would it have been to, like, I don't know, talk to them for 5 seconds or, you know, get that piece in there to, like, help whatever anxiety they're having or.
Right. I totally sympathize with that. For sure. And I would say that, like, in that retroactive guilt that sometimes I've been known to have also is learning to, for me, like, sometimes apologize. This was hard for me because the household that I grew up in, like, Haitians, like, don't really, like, spend a lot of time apologizing to their kids because they're like, you're a kid. You know, so
deal with it.
So apologizing to somebody younger than me was something that I didn't realize was a thing for me, but I realized I had to learn. And sometimes I think going out of my way to say something to a kid like, hey, maybe I shouldn't have said that, or it's okay if you turn that thing. I understand that you might be going through something. Sometimes I feel like that pays more dividends because that kid realizes like, whoa, like that person did see me and they apologized to me. Like, it humanizes you as a person. I just think there's a lot of, I think it's good. I just think it's good.
And that humanization piece is really powerful. And that's something that, you know, I think, I think it's really easy to forget that, because we see them and like we interact with them, right? You know, I stand at my door and shake their hands all the time, but mm-hmm. like sometimes I'm sitting, you know, I'll stand in class. I'm like, you know what? I haven't had like a one-on-one conversation with that student in like, I don't even know how long, right?
Yeah.
And I'm like, and that they're not, you know, odds are they're probably not looking at me as like another human being, right? And they probably think I'm not seeing them and stuff. And that's one of the reasons I'm so happy I got rid of my teacher desk this year. So it forces me to like be like, if I'm sitting, ooh, I am always sitting with them.
You might start a movement. Get rid of the desk.
Well, I not my movement. I stole that from the Ron Clark Academy. That's one. And
you know, you talk about that all the time.
I know. I got to stop because I know the audience is like, Chastain.
But no, I mean, I'm intrigued. I'm like, how do I go? How, is this a thing? Like, maybe I need to put this on my schedule. Like,
oh, you have to. And I mean, I can't say it enough. I literally talk about it in every podcast because it changed my life is what it did. They literally, right. And it's just because they open doors. They show you what, like, when you think of education, like, it's Ron Clark Academy. If you go see it, like, it blows your mind. And one of the things they talked about, though, in the training was, you know, it's the simple thing. Because Ron Clark, you know, they're known for the dancing kids and, you know, all that stuff.
Yes.
But this is one of the more simple things that you get when you're there. And it's, you know, they go mention, he goes, Ron was standing, you know, standing on a slide and he's doing his Ron Clark thing. And he's like, I wonder if any of y'all noticed that none of my teachers sat all day. And he goes, I give them whatever they want. I'll buy whatever food they want, whatever. But I ask them that they're always up and moving because that is how you stay connected with the kids. That's how you stay engaged with them. So,
so true.
When I went back in my room, I was like, you know what? I don't even like this desk. So I got rid of the desk. I got this little tiny thing I put my laptop on and it's got my comfy chair, but the kids sit more in my comfy chair more than I do. But I'm always at my desk, right? When people walk in, you know, they can't find me because I'm sitting with my sixth graders and we're having conversations, we're talking about what the work is and stuff, and that has been a game changer for my space, hands down. But yeah,
I'm intrigued.
Yeah, that teacher desk. And what it does though is they approach me in different ways, right? And I think that's that humanization piece. Like they are that getting kid if I like half my battle is just getting kids to open up to me about, because it's hard to admit when you're struggling with something, right? There's a reason why we say there's no dumb question. What that really means is ask me for help, right? When people say that. But
yeah.
People don't connect to that. Like, of course there's a dumb question, right? People ask dumb questions all the time, but we still want the interaction with the kid. But it's super hard. You know, it's super hard to come out of your bubble, right? As a kid, I mean, it's awkward to say, "Hey, I don't understand this," when everyone at your table gets what you're doing. Right. Mm-hmm. So let's go in that direction for you. How do you, because the big piece about that relationship thing is being able to connect to a kid so you can get them to do certain things. Right. So you can push mm-hmm. them to new levels. And math is really significant here because math can be super challenging, especially if they missed a piece. Right. If they're missing one of the foundation things and you're trying to take them to the next level. So how do you leverage that for yourself when you're trying to get your kids to do something that you know is difficult or an assignment that you know is difficult?
You have to go to them. I think when you're trying to relate to a kid and trying to connect with them, you have to find them where they are. So if that's my rivalry with against the Cavaliers and the Celtics right now with who I call basketball boy, then that's what it is. You know, I'll find you there and I'll learn about basketball or take what little I do know. I spend a lot of time unconsciously listening to what the kids are saying. And then my brain will like store that information and then find a convenient time to bring it back up, like to be funny or to like relate to them or, you know, to crack a joke. So I wish I could give a formula, but to me it is just finding the kid where they are. Using their lingo, oh my gosh. If you can use it correctly, great. If you can purposely use it incorrectly just to be funny, even better. they appreciate that because they're like, oh, this person's like paying attention or like is showing interest, wants to be cool, whatever. And I just think, yeah, going towards them is the first step. My quote that I've always taken since I was in college and is like to capture a child's mind, you must first capture their heart. Only if a child feels right can they think right. So that's always been my motto. Like, it's on my resume. It's on the bottom of my emails. Like, and I do think that there's a layer that you have to strip away first before you can say, okay, hey, I need you to graph that parabola. And I think the other thing that I've learned this year, because I still struggle with this, I don't want anybody listening to this podcast to think, oh, this girl, she must teach some kids who are like high achieving, la, la, la. It's not true. It's not even a little bit true. And I struggle because I will have kids still look at me in the eye. I'll be like, hey, I know you can do this. You know, I'm doing my best teacher encouragement. And they look me in the eye. They're like, I know I can do it. I don't want to. I still have that.
Yeah.
You know? So I don't want anybody to think that that's not, you know, that's not happening in my classroom, because it is. But I think what gave me hope this year was we went, you know, we got our data numbers from last year, and I don't know how to read data or whatever. I want to learn, like, but please just explain what's happening here to me. And somebody told me, I was like, my kid, because I was frustrated one day. I was like, my kids still aren't getting, like, the test scores I want them to get. I still don't feel like, you know, blah, blah, blah. And somebody was like, well, Esther, you moved kids. Like, they were at a certain level, and by the time they left your class, they moved. Just because they didn't get, you know, X, Y, and Z doesn't mean that there wasn't progress. So that shifted my mindset a little bit. I was like, oh, because one time earlier this year, I got a new class in the middle of the year, like in the middle of second quarter or something like that. And the kids were like, they just weren't used to me. You know, they had had another teacher and they were like working. And they were like, whoa, we've never done this much work. I'm trying way harder right now than I've ever tried. Did that kid ace the next test? No. I'm a little bit, but there was a new level of achievement that they had gone through. There was a new level of perseverance, I guess. I don't know what the right word is. And that, I'm trying to look for better ways to capture that. Using the relationship piece to capture the kids' ability and move them, not just get them an A on a test.
Yeah, and that's like, so for me, you know, you said a lot of things there that I was like, yep. Because, you know, I think, you know, I want to hit on this one point before we move on to what I wanted to say, which is this idea that the teachers that we bring on the podcast, or the teachers you hear about, or the teachers who have like immaculate posts on Instagram and stuff like that, like they deal with all the same stuff. Like, I think the biggest cop out in the world is to say, well, they had this type of student or whatever.
Yeah.
And you know, the RCA, I think I've defended RCA personally at least 8,000 times when people are like, oh, well, they're a private school. They pick their kids. I'm like, okay, well, first of all, you're wrong because of this, this, and this, you know? And I just think it's really like, if you're at the point where you're making excuses why someone could do something that you personally haven't achieved yet in your room, like you're just, that's excuse, like that's just an excuse to not do something. You know what I mean? If you see teachers really achieving, you know, great relationships, and you're like, well, it's because they're students of this. No, that's just your excuse, right? It's challenging for everybody. With every student has their own baggage or complications that they have. But one of the things is, you know, for me, I'm taking kids and I'm trying to really push them. But like our school, and I've talked about this before, like we are the lowest scoring middle school in everything pretty much in our district, right? So we are like we're like the shade of our district. You know, everyone kind of looks at us. Like when I meet, you know, my son goes to school in the same district and they'll go, oh, you're a teacher. Where do you teach? You know, I'm like, RMS. And they go, Oh, you know, and there's like a little gleam in their eye, and I'm like, what you got? What you want? And they, and like, but having that, but it's funny because like, they see test scores, and we see all this growth and stuff that's happening. When I first got here a few years ago, there was fights all the time. The culture was trash. No one respected the teachers. And we've worked super hard to fix that. And, but you know what? Culture doesn't show up on a test all the time, right? Yeah. Getting kids to say, you know, to follow a direction, right, or to follow a procedure or not fight someone as the first excuse when you're having a disagreement. Like, those things are so important to those kids' lives, but those don't show up on our state tests, right? Mm. And I think for a lot of us, I think it's really easy to forget, right? Especially if you're someone who's, if you're with students who struggle on tests that, you know, and people stress out like, oh, well, my scores aren't here, but there's a reason why like growth is important, right? Just like you said, that movement of, hey, you know what? They took a step in the right direction. I mean, you're not going to take a kid who's 3 years behind in math and accelerate them to that point, but you know what? You can close some of those gaps that have been hitting them for so long. Do you talk about test scores a lot with your kids, like their data, their personal data? No?
No. No, I do not talk about their data or their test scores.
Is there any push in your district to do that at all?
I want to say yes, not a big one, though. I can remember them wanting something or other. I know. Look at me. I do know that our... I don't even know what this woman's proper job title is, but we have study halls in our district, and they have an hour and a half every other school day in a study hall. And they try their best to use that time to do kind of stuff like that with the kids. So one time or a couple times, this woman came in and sat down with the kids like, hey, this is what you did last year. If you want to go to this type of school, this is what you should be aiming for. This is, so they kind of talk about that kind of stuff with the kids, these levels of this, these levels of that, this, you know, you should work on this for the next year, stuff like that. So they do it. They do it, but they don't really bother, try to get us to
hand on it
to
too
do
much.
That much. Yeah.
Yeah. I think, well, I know I've seen a lot of difference here. Like, you know, it's like data in a lot of areas, and they're definitely doing a big push, and I understand the reason for it, but there's just so much that doesn't show up on data. And I just keep talking about that. Like, like the fact that, like, you know, one of my students, you know, they read 5 books this year, which, you know, to a lot of people, that's not a lot. And, but you know what, how many did they read last year?
Right? Yeah.
0, 1, 1.5. Maybe they pretended to read one that their student or that their teacher read with them. And like those, I think it's so important to focus on those gains, right? And the incremental things. And I think relationships really play a piece to that. If you're working with a student who's super struggling, do you, if you have a student in your room who is like just dying, right, in math, or like they're just, like they like they're on the hill and they're there, but they're just flat at that point. Like, at what, you know, how do you approach a student like that to kind of humanize that struggle that they're having?
I try to find the connection first. Like, okay, how can I connect? What do I know about this kid? How can I, you know, infiltrate their bubble a little bit? That's my first tactic. I always say, if I can get you to laugh, then I can get you to do anything, you know? So I try to do that and then, get them to do it. For some kids, like, I can think of one kid right now in my head, like, never talks, never cracks a smile, met with his parents, you know, straight up told his parents he wasn't going to do anything either. Like, and I can recall all the times I've circulated the room and stopped by his desk. And for me, that's something that I'm still working on. Like, yo, how do I infiltrate that kind of space? How do I get you to, like, what's going to motivate you but with most, that's like a special case scenario. Most kids, getting to them where they are, and then little by little, like, don't expect them to do it all in one day. You know, like, take the little bit that you can, like, in that day. Like, if this kid wasn't doing any of his assignment and then decides to do 10 questions, you take your 10 questions and you treat it like it's gold, you know? And that, like, I can recall, like, one of my other students who I always have to rein him in, always have to focus him, always have to. And I was like, okay, so what I learned with him was, all right, finish half of these, just half of these, like, all the odds. You finish all the odds, you can go get that cell phone. Do you understand me? And he would sit there and he would come, he would sit right next to me. He would ask me questions, get him through it. He would get through it. And with him being as focused as he possibly can and asking me all the questions and doing his work, he finished half his problems in the same time that everybody else was finishing all the problems. I think that's something to consider. Although I think like the thought of doing that all across the board for every kid, like how much do you need to do, is overwhelming. Like, if you know it's this one kid and that's working for him, like, take that and try to do that with that kid. And then as time goes along and you learn more about all the different kids, then you can figure out what's making this one tick and what this one needs. Don't look at it like as all 125 at the time. Like, if you're dealing with one kid, like, focus on that one kid. That would be my advice, because looking at it as a whole is like, then I'm not going to just do anything. And I think that goes back to that. The people who struggle with that is because, wow, all of them? That's a lot. Focus on the one.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's just a good strategy in teaching is, like, because it's really easy to get overwhelmed with all the things you have to get better at and all the problems you have to handle in your classroom and all the kids that have different things that they need to do. Like, it's super easy to just, like, let yourself get drowned by all of this. But, you know, attacking one thing after another is definitely something quality. But one of the things I really want to hit on real quick is, have you ever struggled with having, like, were they, like, it's almost like students got too comfortable and they're like, you know, it's Miss B, it's okay. You know what? I don't need to do, you know? And they start seeing the friend rather than the teacher, and you kind of have to go, okay, walls, this is, you know.
Yes.
So okay, I'm sure there's someone listening who's having that. They're like, you know, I have that relational piece, but they're just not, you know, they're after a while, they're seeing me more as their friend rather than their teacher. And there's a conflict of interest at that point and all kinds of other things go wrong.
I was supposed to do an Instagram Live one time. It just did not work because my Wi-Fi is sometimes disrespectful. And one of the questions that I got a couple times, I was supposed to do it with a townie teacher, Michaela. People were asking that question a lot. Like, how do you manage to... And I will say it's two-parted. Number one is being relational. You're going to, like, expect that. Like, walk into it expecting that and learn how to counteract it. Number two, you counteract it by teaching people how to treat you. So, yes, I do have kids who think that we're besties and we're not. And I straight up tell my kids, like, listen, I'm not your friend. Like, I'm your teacher. And that doesn't mean we're not friendly. You know, there's a difference. So and then I'm also the type of person who, if something happens, I know immediately I don't like it, but I might not know why I specifically didn't like it in the moment. So I'll go home and I'll be like, I really didn't like this interaction with this kid. Like, what did that kid say to me, or what did that kid do that really rubbed me the wrong way? So I'm a delayed processor. So for a lot of times I go home and I'm thinking and I'm reflecting, and I'll have to go pull that kid aside or go speak in front of the class like two class periods later to say, hey, let's revisit this situation. and talk about why I was not about it, right? So, and that's the whole, you teach people how to treat you. That's anybody, any relationship in life. And with kids, as soon as they see the friend, they forget or want to forget about the teacher. And so it's not, I think what helps me is a perspective of a lot of times the kid is not intentionally being disrespectful. It's not like they woke up that morning and they were like, I'm going to disrespect Miss Brunette. That's not what they're thinking. They're just thinking, oh, this is how I teach my friends, or this is how I would treat my friends. So let me treat her that way. And so I have to stop and tell a kid, listen, I know you, when you're talking with your buddies, you cuss at them like that. You're not going to cuss at me like that. That's not going to work out for me, you know? I know that you ask me to borrow a pencil all the time, and I say yes. That doesn't mean you just go steal my pencils. It means you need to ask first. Yes, I will say yes. But that's the proper, like, channel, because you can't just go taking stuff and assuming that it's yours, because then they're going to assume all of the things are there. So it's definitely treating, you teach people how to treat you. So you have to say to yourself, this is going to come at a cost. Like, being a relational is going to come at a cost. That cost is going to be, every once in a while, a kid's going to overstep their bound. You still say, hey, I did not like the way that you spoke to me like that, and I would appreciate it if you don't do that ever again. And that's anybody, anywhere, any place, you know?
Yeah, it's funny because I'm still learning, right? Yeah, I'm learning right. All the
we
time.
We all are.
And this year was probably my most successful year in probably every way possible, but as compared to all the other ones, but really the relational piece, because I felt like I really know my students, you know, especially as is winding down. And, you know, one of the things I was able to do this year was go, okay, you know, boundary, you know, because, you know, I don't mind if they sit in this chair right here, but, you know, last year I had kids that would all, you know, always think like it was their right to go sit in the special chairs
right.
or whatever. And I was really bad about reining them in. And this year I was like, nope, that's not how we play the game. That is not, nope, there are boundaries here. And that, it's funny because I've said, like, watching a sixth grader, when you go, we're not friends. Like, I'm still your teacher. It's like, you know, it's like a shock. Like, it hurts them a little bit. And, you know, you don't mean it to be mean. That's not how you mean it. But, I mean,
exactly.
You're 11 or you're 16 or, you know, whatever age group you're working with. And it's like, that's just, I mean, come on. You really think that we're besties? Let's
like, why did you think that was okay?
But that, you know, I think that's probably the hardest piece, especially for people who...
It is.
Yeah. Well, the people who are emotionally aware, right? Like, the who are just good with people. Like, it's really hard to get kids to respect both sides of this.
Yeah.
So, we're close to an hour, but I want to end on advice that you would give to teachers who, you know, twofold, right? Like I said earlier, we got the teacher who really struggles to make the connections in the first place, but they know it's important. Mm-hmm. And we got teachers who are really good at connections, but not necessarily 100% on creating the boundary. So it's still a healthy relationship and not like this weird state of student abuse on the teacher or whatever. So what would be your advice to both of these styles of teachers?
You gotta do it. Like, don't be afraid, because on the other side, there's a lot of joy there. There's a lot of richness and a lot of fullness that you're not gonna experience if you don't go in for it. And maybe that starts with you doing a club or coaching, or maybe try it, get a little taste of it somewhere else, maybe, if you're not ready. And I think it'll hook you, and you'll want to figure out, how do I make this happen on the daily, and have some stinking fun. Like, I would definitely say that there have been, like, I can look back and think about some of the stringent things or some of the just really ordered, really, you know, tight run ship moments of my life. And I was like, for what? You know, like I look back on them and I'm like, you could have loosened up a little bit and accomplished just as much, you know? And so I would say, yeah, have some fun, because I mean, that's what you're going to remember. That's what you're going to take with you. And that's what they're going to remember. And that's what they're going to take with you. So meet them where they are. Give it a try and have some fun.
Esther, I couldn't give you any more praise. You're absolutely amazing. You know, the fact that, I mean, you're relational on this, right? I mean, it's funny. Someone asked me not too long ago, they go, it seems like you have a good rapport with your guests. You know, how do you connect these people? I'm like, honestly, I talk to them through email. And then the first time we ever speak is like 10 minutes before we go live. And it's what happens when you talk to teachers. I mean, this is our freaking job. I mean, our job is to talk and to relate to people. And you were just fantastic. I hope so many people got things from this.
I hope so too.
Before I let you go on the episode though, what's something you want to plug? Where can people find you? Do you have anything special you want to tell them? What do you got?
You can totally find me on IG, Instagram, at Esther Brunot. I mean, you can find me a lot of other places too, but I spend most of my time on IG telling silly stories about the kids trying my love life or hashtag basketball boy and lip gloss girl. Like, so if you just want to come along for the journey and see what's happening in my classroom that's not math related, then you can totally feel free. And I want to connect with you. I want to hear all your stories. That's like my favorite part about my IG is like people telling me like how they've got similar situations. So yeah, come along for the ride. I'd love to have you.
And with that, ladies and gentlemen, we are closing out this wonderful two-part episode. I hope you enjoyed Esther as much as I did. I hope you got so much from this episode. I know it was a powerful episode to reflect on at the end of the year. I know some of y'all aren't done with your year yet at the time of listening to this, but it's coming. And I think this is a good time to reflect on these pieces. How well did we build our relationships? How many students slipped through the spaces in our room? How many students did we not connect with on a level that they needed us to connect with them with? Did we not manage those relationships correctly to where kids started looking at us as more friends than their teacher or mentor or whatever piece that you're trying to play? I think these are always the good reflections, especially as we go into the next year. For everything else, ladies and gentlemen, go to teachmeteacherpodcast.com. That is where you can find every episode we've ever done. That is where you can always find links to stuff if you're confused or if like it's gotten lost in social media or something like that. Go to the website. It's always there. Otherwise, subscribe on iTunes. Hit that star review button. Let us know how you're enjoying the podcast. Let other educators know how you're enjoying. Make sure to give us a shout out on those stories on Instagram. Show us your reflections. I talk to every one of y'all that put up a story. I'm always reaching back to you guys. I love seeing it. Let me see what reflections you are getting from this episode or any episode. I don't care if it's episode 1 or 65, which we aren't at yet. So, for everything else, ladies and gentlemen, have a good one.